You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where the first thing we look for in a dungeon is the master key. Joining me this week, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Now, Daniel, I have to know something, and since you're in the political headquarters of the world, I think you can either redeem me or make me feel like a fool here. My response to Donald Trump losing in Iowa, is that now off the books that he has won in New Hampshire and South Carolina? Do I look like an asshat right now? Don't say you always look like an asshat.
Oh man, no! You look more like a petite sausage. Just saying, if you look in the mirror, I'm not. Oh, well, not I mean, exactly what
not,
we're.
Not, I mean, that's only if you have a point at my face at the mirror.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Especially if you're laughing, then you're totally red. No, look, I mean this quite literally. Is what I'm trying to say. Every political pundit assumed Donald Trump would be done by now. Every single one. And so far, everyone is wrong. And I think we just need to prepare ourselves by saying the phrase Supreme Leader Trump. Just over and over again. That's really how we need to prepare ourselves.
So is he the front runner for the Tom Brady Greatness in the Face of Doubt Award?
I'm not sure I would call what he's accomplishing greatness.
I don't know. I heard he wants to make America great again.
Yeah, like G-R-A-T-E, like grading. Yes. But I don't know about the other one. It's unbelievable to me that he is this close to the nomination for president of the United States of one of the two major parties. It is incredible.
The two-party system is dead.
Long live the two-party system.
Also joining me via Skype, from the summits of white privilege, James Elias. James, have you done anything involving the word peg this week? Maybe you played Peggle, you got a peg leg, you were pegged?
So Justin's referring to when we went to see the Deadpool movie. There was a certain scene involving pegging. You'll know what I'm talking about if you see the movie. And Justin made it sound like I leaned over on the episode. Justin made it sound like I leaned over to him, like during the movie, and looked at him with like, you know, a face of like, oh, hey, you should really know this. And like, yeah, that's pegging. Like, yeah, like,
I mean,
and looked at him very emphatically, like, pegging.
I felt kind of
yeah.
violated when you said it. I mean, I felt violated and a little turned on.
Needed a safe space, and that safe space is Uranus.
If you need a safe space, don't see the Deadpool movie.
Yeah.
People who are into pegging, is their favorite animal a Pegasus?
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah.
Do they like to sing the song "O Pega My Heart"?
Isn't there a PG workout at the gym? Is that something?
What?
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we all know that. Moving on.
You know who's into pegging? Tim Cook. Let's talk about how he is not fucking over America, maybe? In the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. Isn't just a fad. 'Cause kid, there's consequences to what we say and what we do. While you're dancing like an idiot, they're looking up to you.
Apple was all over the social media this week, not for some bend gate or new product launch, but for the fact that they may be one of the few people in America standing up for your rights. Yes,
did you say
Tim
Apple
Cook
or Donald Trump?
Oh, I definitely didn't say Donald Trump. No, sir. That man is probably into pegging. Just going to put that out there. Not that I'm actually making this claim. Please do not sue me for defamation, Donald Trump. Thank you. No, Apple released an open letter written by Tim Cook titled A Message to Our Customers, in which he explained why he will not be complying with a, quote, unprecedented demand by the United States government to create a backdoor into all iPhones, but in particular a backdoor to the – yes. Oh, boy. I keep thinking of George Takei for some reason. By the way, pegging would not be something that gay people would be into.
Right? Or pegging is not – yeah, pegging does not refer to the gay sex.
Well, I mean, I guess if a gay guy strapped a dildo on and fucked a guy with it, it'd be pegging, wouldn't it?
Right. I guess it would.
There's just not really a need to do that.
Right. Like, onto the hip? Like, where are they strapping it to their forehead?
Well, they got a micro penis. They need the augmentation.
Like Hitler, which is a story we didn't cover this week, but German scientists have revealed that Hitler had a micro penis.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like this is piling on at some point, though. Like, just let it rest, okay? The guy was bad. We all know.
Do Jewish people laughing at us? Do Jewish men secretly have huge penises? Is that why, like, Jewish women have to make sure they marry them to keep them away from all everyone else?
Is that why they have to reduce their size with circumcision? Because it's just too big otherwise, and women can't handle it?
All of a sudden. That's why they get all the money, because they have all the confidence?
It's all coming together.
Oh, boy. Back to encryption. I'm not sure where I go with this. In particular, Tim Cook, who is usually a big proponent of the backdoor, has been asked to open up the iPhone used by the San Bernardino terrorist, the guy who blew people away at his job. But here's some of the things that Tim Cook had to say.
The guy who blew people away at his job was Tim Cook.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yes. I knew where that was going and I wanted to stop it, but it was like a guy who had jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. You just have to watch him hit the wall. Okay. So Tim Cook said, specifically the FBI wants us to make a new version of the iPhone operating system, circumventing several important security features and installed on an iPhone recovered during the investigation. In the wrong hands, this software, which does not exist today, would have the potential to unlock any iPhone in someone's physical possession. Tim Cook went on to call this a threat to data security and said that they absolutely would not do it and that it is setting a dangerous precedent. And in the wrong hands, i.e. the hands of the government or a hacker, this could be an unprecedented and catastrophic data breach.
Isn't Tim Cook just saying you can't get in the back door without protection?
Yes. That's what he's saying. He says, you, FBI, will not be getting in this back door or any other girlfriend.
They're not giving him any assurances that it's going to be safe to do this, so he's saying no. Close for
no means no.
That's right. Exit only.
Mm-hmm. So, all innuendo aside, I'd like to point out that in his statement, Tim Cook actually doesn't mention his concerns that the government might abuse this. That is nowhere in the letter, actually. If you look, it's conspicuously absent. He only says that if a backdoor is created, then, you know, criminals, you know, con artists, you know, they could enter this back door.
That is
and
very
he's not
true.
Worried about the government. He doesn't mention the problem with the government being able to enter our back door.
Yes, indeed. Because I feel like the government's already got a finger in everything anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's true.
The government's already got two in this thing at that point. But I think he didn't do that because it's kind of like poking the bear. Like, you're going to say, all these criminals could use this to hack your phone. Also the government. Like, that's just going to put Apple in the government's crosshairs.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, actually, and I don't think this is irony, but people have been using that word all week. This encryption that causes the need for this backdoor unlock actually comes about after the government's PRISM program has been revealed by Edward Snowden. So, in many ways, the encryption that the FBI wants them to break is in response to the FBI snooping in people's phones in the first place. Or the NSA, sorry. So
they also only need to break the encryption because they couldn't fucking figure out how to hack the phone in 10 times. So they're like, we're incompetent, fix it for us.
So there's actually a couple things about this, and I was telling Justin James beforehand that we can get as technical or not as we want. The one thing that we need to be real careful about saying is that they're actually not asking Apple to break the encryption. What they're asking for is a specific software to be designed and installed on this phone. The problem is that that back door would allow the FBI to get around a lot of the security features on other phones as well, but it's not technically breaking the encryption. Which,
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just that. Right? Like, I'm a layman, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't want to create something in my own lab that can destroy my own lab, even if I trust all of my employees. If one person gets pissed off and has a bad day, or one person's a mole, that software is going to be out there, that's on the internet, and Apple, which is known for being unhackable, you know, they're supposed to have better safety than Windows, you've now given the entire world the master key to the dungeon of Apple.
Yes, and that is really what Apple is responding to. It's responding to what they keep using the word unprecedented, and that's very important. And no other time in history has a company been forced by a court to basically undermine one of the core values that they provide to customers, which is absolute data security. And in this case, the court is saying you have to destroy one of your core customer values for the sake of law enforcement.
This is the equivalent of asking Bill Belichick to design a defensive game plan to stop his offense.
It's actually very similar. That's actually not a horrible
metaphor. Yeah, fuck you. You're laughing at me if you think I'm dumb. He made a football metaphor. He dumb.
So going along with the very creative football metaphor, somehow you managed to relate this to football again. But anyway, going along with that, why is it that that Apple cannot just simply open the phone themselves and then send the relevant data over to the FBI? Why can't they do that? This seems to me, like, correct me if I'm wrong, since you've looked into the story more than me, but this seems like this is kind of, this issue of the San Bernardino shooter is kind of a non sequitur. They're bringing in this particular iPhone so that they can gain access to all other iPhones. It seems like it's clearly just kind of a rationalization.
Yes, there are.
Open this one phone, give the FBI the data, and then that's it. They destroy the phone. And so then both parties get what they allegedly want.
If they destroyed the phone, that means they deflated the footballs.
Oh, God. Jesus, help us.
We're trying to just any connection possible.
Yeah, just jam this metaphor in the back door. Okay, so here's the thing. This is almost entirely a ruse on the part of the FBI. There have already been leaks that the FBI probably has already hacked the phone anyway. And additionally, the NSA could have hacked this phone 10 days ago if they wanted it in all the time that's been covered. And then layer on top of that, what's the guy? McAfee, like McAfee antivirus. He's actually running for president for on the Libertarian Party.
I was like, what
has offered to hack the phone for the FBI, but not give them the phone, give them only the data, which is what James is suggesting.
Which now he has all the information needed to create the ultimate safety for spyware protection for Apple. That's why he wants to do that.
Yes, exactly.
Because if he figures out how to beat it, he can protect against it.
But here's the thing. The FBI isn't interested in this one phone, as James said. The FBI is interested in creating a court precedent that would allow them to force any company to do this for any product. And the crazy thing is, the law they're trying to use, this is the legal nerdy side of me that's becoming more and more every day, is the All Writs Act of 1789. Yes.
Damn.
The All Writs Act of 1789, which basically the All Writs Act says that a judge can create an order. I feel like James is tying balloon animals. That's what it sounds like. I feel like that's what it sounds like.
It is. I'm sitting in a chair and I can't sit still.
is it a giraffe? Is it a...
And the chair is made entirely of a bunch of large balloons tied together.
No, I think he's doing a balloon dildo to peg something.
Because scratching balloons is a fetish, right?
Get it out of my mind. I can't stop thinking about it after seeing that movie.
By the way, I think this is the gayest episode we've ever had, and Elliot's not on it.
Oh man.
Pegging isn't even gay. It's specifically like, if you're gay, then you don't need to peg. Anyway. Let's go.
Away from pegging,
back to the back door.
Heteronormative ideals.
I guess. I guess I was being very heteronormative.
So, here's the thing. The All Writs Act, which is an insane act to begin with, well, not really. I mean, there's some use of it, but it basically gives the courts, quote, the authority to issue orders that are not otherwise covered by statute. So basically, as long as the order is quote unquote reasonable, the court can give that order. And in this case, the court has ordered Apple to unlock this phone, and they think that is not unreasonable, which is why they can do it, even though there's no specific law.
Why can't they just use the Patriot Act?
Well, funny that you should say that, but the Patriot Act can basically be used for anything, so that's actually kind of true. But
but the Patriot Act can't be specifically used to force Apple to write a backdoor software into all of their existing phones.
Right, which is why they're trying to use this really obscure, little-known law. And if this is the thing, if they're successful, then they can use this reasoning in a court to make any tech company do anything, basically.
Right.
Which is really frightening. And that's particularly why Apple is not interested in doing this. So good for Apple, as far as I'm concerned. Ted Cruz has said he's dubious of Apple's decision here. Makes me hate Ted Cruz a little bit. But yeah. Donald Trump has demanded a boycott of Apple. And in fact, tweeted his demand of a boycott of Apple from his iPhone. So
was it really? Did it say tweeted from his iPhone?
Yes, sent from iPhone.
Kaboom.
Yeah.
So. No, this is well, to be fair, buying a new phone would cost a lot of money. So, Donald Trump, you should ask his good friend Tom Brady
how Tom Brady deals with his phones.
Oh my god.
No, I only say that because Trump keeps calling Brady his good friend, but isn't what Apple's doing here, Adam Carolla's argument? About smokers and about the NRA. If you give the government an inch, they take a foot.
Yes, indeed. Adam Carolla says, yeah, the analogy being smokers basically said, yeah, we'll go to the bar. Yeah, we'll go to this section. Yeah, we'll go outside. Yeah, we'll go 10 feet from here. Now they can't smoke in their own home versus the NRA who's like, I'm sorry, ban howitzers. Go fuck yourselves. We'll settle this in court.
Right.
And, they've been more successful, obviously. So no, you're exactly right. And what's particularly frightening about this from an individual rights perspective is something that Edward Snowden said, which is, it's crazy that we have to rely on companies like Apple to protect our rights and not the government. And it's the government that's trying to violate them. Yeah. So good for Apple. I'll continue to buy your phones, even though Tim Cook has, single-handedly destroyed more wealth than any other company in human history. So, go fuck yourself. Speaking of someone who, if they wanted to peg you, you'd probably let them. Ronda Rousey.
I don't think you'd have a choice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, she's gonna peg your ass, and there's not much you can do about
it.
That is if she's still alive. Ronda Rousey apparently contemplated suicide after her upsetting loss to Holly Holm. This is being reported by Mashable, my least favorite tech news site because they've become a social justice rag. But nonetheless. Ronda Rousey's loss against Holly Holm took a bigger toll on her than everyone realized, the article says. In an interview with Ellen, the famous fighter admitted that she contemplated suicide almost immediately. Quote, I was literally sitting there and thinking about killing myself. Rousey was worried about the public's perception of her, concerned that her entire career would be derailed because of the loss. No one gives a shit about me anymore without this, she said. And here is my favorite part of this article because it goes against all the social justice-y things and I'm surprised they even published it. However, the one thing that inspired her through her darkness? Her boyfriend, Travis Brown. Quote, I looked up at him and I was just like, I need to have his babies, she said. I need to stay alive. Mm-hmm.
Now,
how's that for feminism?
Yeah, well, there's two things here. Now, I know you're saying, you know, this is anti-social justice and everything, but I have to ask you, are you okay with her saying that? You think that's a healthy thing for her to say?
I don't think it's a healthy thing for her to say overall. I just think it's so against what the social justice warriors believe is, like, quote unquote feminism that it makes me laugh.
Yeah. What I like about Ronda Rousey is she, it's clear that she just makes up her own mind and thinks for herself. If only just because she doesn't quite understand social justice, like, basically she just doesn't understand a lot of the ideas that most people accept, or at least a lot of people who are her fans accept. Like, people really look up to her, and, you know, she doesn't fully understand feminism, but she's like, oh, okay, well, you know, you support me being a woman in fighting? Like, I guess that's good. You know, I support me being a woman in fighting.
Fighting, but, good. But Rhonda, good.
she ends up being really mixed. Like, you know, she just says, hey, I make, they just said, like, oh, well, isn't there a gender pay gap? And she says, well, look, I make shit tons of money because I do a great job. Like, she's just like, wait, I don't get it. Like, you get paid in accordance to how much money you produce for your boss. Like, she just didn't get the question. But then on the other hand, she voted for Bernie Sanders, which is actually what led to her losing, because I think after that, she just decided to redistribute her championship.
Zing! Money good, fire bad.
I mean, I don't know if we can say Ronda Rousey is a think-for-yourselfer, because would a think-for-yourselfer really get out of committing suicide, like, get out of that stupor by saying, I need to live in order to have that man's babies? Like, I want to have kids. It was like, I want to have that man's babies. Like, I don't know, it seems very second-handed to me.
Oh, I don't know. That sounds like, you know, she values her, wait, was it boyfriend or fiance?
It says boyfriend.
It's boyfriend. It's her boy, you know, she just values her boyfriend. Like, you don't want to just have anyone's babies. She loves him. Seems pretty first-handed to me.
That statement, it's the other statement that makes me
exactly.
more worried.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, saying like, oh, well, it wasn't that she lost something that was of value to her, her undefeated record. It was that, what are other people going to think of me now? Now the thing that everyone was interested in me, the thing that people had an interest in me about is no longer there. So now I'm worthless because other people don't like me. That's what I find to be second-handed.
She seems to be very... But that's what I'm saying. Couple that with the comment about the boyfriend. Other people find me worthless. Oh, but he doesn't, so it's okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it sounds like, you know, she's a mixed case. She's got some amount of thinking for herself. She has some amount of second-handedness, and you can tell the effect it's had on her self-esteem. Someone with her amount of success, and it still just isn't – it still doesn't do her much good. She still basically feels like she's a failure.
Yeah, it's incredible to me. I don't know. I don't watch fighting on TV. I don't know if either of you do. It's just not a thing I do. So I have very little concern about Ronda Rousey in general.
To be fair, no one really watched this fight because it was over very quickly.
Oh, see, I don't even know. I just know that it kind of happened and she lost. That's the extent of my knowledge.
She just lose. She got knocked the fuck out.
Yeah.
What I found interesting about the interview was I've never heard a woman talk about the aftermath of a fight, especially a fight that they lost. I feel like when you interview a man about a fight that he loses, he would just say like, I don't know, man, he kicked my ass. What do you want me to say? Whereas with she really went into the details. Like, she talked about what it felt like to get hit and, like, how much pain the other fighter caused her, and then all of her emotions about having lost the fight. Like, I've never seen a woman talk about fighting, and women obviously talk about things very differently. They're much more open with their emotions. And I've never seen that perspective brought to a fight.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, a man might say it was tough to lose, but you're right, he wouldn't go into the details like that. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Nah, I just think she's a giant pussy. I've known nothing about her. But speaking of perspectives, you don't typically get, white privilege is a fallacy. At least that's according to Dennis Prager in the National Review, in an article that it got excoriated on social media this week, but one I think that makes several valid points, so we wanted to bring it up. This is part two in a series about widely held beliefs that are either untrue or meaningless. And he talks about how basically white privilege is a nonsense concept that the left uses to make victims out of people. And he says it's nonsense for a few reasons. First, no reasonable person can argue that white privilege applies to the great majority of whites, let alone to all whites. There are simply too many variables other than race that determine individual success in America. He goes in a little bit to talking about the history of different, you know, kinds of white people. And then he says also there are a host of privileges that dwarf white privilege. For instance, two-parent household privilege. And he gives this really interesting statistic. The poverty rate among two-parent black families is 7%, but 22% among white single-parent families, which is very interesting. And then, of course, he says the other privilege, if one wants to use the term, is Asian privilege. Asian Americans do way better than white Americans in schools on IQ tests, on credit scores, and many other things. So I know on this show we talk a lot about white privilege, but what specifically got your attention from this article, gentlemen?
I want to know. This is what I want to know. You can go to Second James. This is my show. Was it smart for him to hand an argument to the social justice warriors by talking about the privilege of the two-family household?
Was it smart of him to hand that argument to them?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's because he, and a lot of people on the right of this particular persuasion are advocates for two-parent homes or advocates for bringing back the family unit. So it's going to come up anyway because he's going to say, yes, there is a privilege there and you shouldn't want to bring up people who are in single-family homes. You should want to end single-family homes. Would be
right.
His answer.
And they're going to say, end your privilege. You shouldn't try to make other people live like you. You shouldn't have an advantage because of that.
Yeah, that's sort of there anyway. I mean, I see what you're saying, but the thing is, this argument has been going on for a long time. The left has sort of already been making that argument. The left, that argument predates the social justice conversation. I'm rewatching The West Wing in my spare time because I just fucking love that show. And on so many episodes, when they're talking about feminism and women's issues, it's all about single mothers and how in the show, according to them, the right demeans single parent homes and they need to do more to prop them up because they're just as good as regular family homes. But again, as Dennis Prager points out, doesn't pan out in the statistics. So
doesn't pan out in basic knowledge of psychology. I mean, men and women provide different things for each other psychologically. So a mother and a father would provide different things for their children psychologically. Now I just pissed off gay parents too.
I know, but and
yeah, but with gay parents,
to the psychology
there's two
thing, of them. Yes. And in addition to the psychology thing, it is literally just a prosperity thing. Two parents equals more money equals better opportunities, better schools, more after school things. Usually more time for one parent to focus on homework with the kid and give attention. And there are so many things. It's undeniable to me that two parent homes are way better. This is coming from a guy who was in a single mother home, but I had a huge help from my grandparents who lived very close. So I understand that.
Yeah.
Dynamic.
So you had a three parent home. Fuck you all, two people. Homes, two-parent homes.
Yeah, seriously. What this privilege, three-parent privilege. Wow. So yeah, Justin, I think you're bringing up a good point, which is similar to something I brought up last time, two weeks ago, which
pegging.
Is like, yeah, pegging. Right. Everything just kind of circles back towards Uranus. So, kind of like the Starship Enterprise. But here's the deal. Like, yeah, we pointed last week or 2 weeks ago, I pointed out, stop giving the left arguments. Stop, like, taking their logic to its logical conclusion. The left knows where this is going. They're only introducing it step by step because it's so ridiculous. Like, and it will get there. So you're right about that. Eventually, I think we will see a kind of denunciation of the two family household in the form of like, oh, well, it's, you're giving your child too much of an upper hand over all the other children. And that's, you know, that's not equalitarian. But I think we will eventually see that. But I don't think Dennis Prager is making a misstep here, because he goes on to explain why the left does this. And this I found very interesting. Let me go back to the article here.
He says specifically it has to do with race and victimhood, but James, you can go ahead with the full quote.
Like it achieves a political goal, and that is to continue to make blacks think that America is racist. And basically what that allows the left to do is consolidate its power over the blacks as a voting bloc and as a source of it allows them to continue to harp on this idea of injustice. It continues to instill guilt in white populations, making them more likely to dish out more money to the government. In general, this is a rationalization for further government power. I'm putting a few words into Dennis Prager's mouth here, because this is kind of in line with something I've always thought about the left, is that all of their ideas are not really things that they actually take seriously. They don't actually consider them to be descriptors of reality. They see it as a just one more rationalization to expand the power of the state. Now, the average leftist on the street, they believe these rationalizations. But at the end of the day, the people who are really throwing the switches, the people who are the ideologues, they know that, like, okay, well, we don't actually think America is super, super racist, but we need to portray it that way in order to achieve our political goals.
Well, yeah, because the people who are running everything and setting the agenda, they don't believe in reality. They don't believe in truth. They believe in shaping it to fit the world they want, because they believe whoever has the power shapes the truth. So they think, I can just say whatever I want as long as my goal is achieved. I mean, isn't that what I just said? That was someone's approach to law or something?
What?
That sounds maybe like Saul Alinsky's. Saul Alinsky wasn't a lawyer, but like, yeah, this all comes from Saul Alinsky's playbook. I'm like, yeah, he says use ideology to, get your goal. You don't necessarily have to be true with your ideology. Just make sure that your ideology furthers your political goal. Like, Saul Alinsky explicitly says this. Like, truth is not, your ideas don't have to be truthful. They just have to get you where you want to go.
Right. So maybe that's what I'm thinking of. You know, it's the idea that the ends give value to the means. But then, you know, one of my favorite tweets ever was a quote from Penn Jillette, which I'm sure he said long before Twitter. But, he says, at times like this, it's important to remember that there are no ends, only means. And the point of that means, it's not that you can't have goals and you can't have things you're striving towards. It's just that life is one long experience and you just keep doing things. So if you're focusing on the ends and doing whatever you want for the means, will you end up in your everyday life just doing bad things and not caring about what you're doing?
That's a really deep point. Yeah.
Well, Penny was awesome, dude.
Man, I feel like having to look at a lake and stare at it and contemplate.
Sing songs to the lake about the lake.
Knowing the universe, but I wouldn't want to do it alone, at least according to a new study. And all I can think about when I'm reading this new article in the Washington Post called Loneliness Grows from Individual Ache to Public Health Hazard is about James. I just have James screaming in my ear, you're giving them arguments. Because this is all I could read in this article is the left, just the lawmakers just furiously taking notes. So loneliness, long a bane of humanity, is increasingly seen today as a serious public health hazard. Scientists who have identified significant links between loneliness and illness are pursuing the precise biological mechanisms that make it such a menace, digging down to the molecular level and finding that social isolation changes the human genome in profound, long-lasting ways. The scientists' conclusion: loneliness can be a lethal risk, and the United States, which so prizes individuality, is doing far too little to alleviate it. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, there individuality, is a suppressed premise in there.
Individuality leads to loneliness, which is a public health hazard. Therefore, outlaw individuality.
Right, this is the whole idea of the myth of the rugged individualist, right? This idea that because we're all individualists, we all want to step on each other. We all want to beat the shit out of each other. They don't believe in, the traitor principle. They believe in the Hobbesian principle.
Yes. It is definitely a straw man of what individuality is, but it's so accepted nowadays. It is just, individuality necessarily means you doing whatever the fuck you want to any other human being to achieve your goals.
Right, because, well, it's this false dichotomy we have where that's where we see as individualism, but then we see, you know, as we were talking about with Ronda Rousey, we see that having friends and having other people as a value, we see it as a second-handed thing. I mean, this was my problem with the end of Lost, right? Where the whole show was about these characters trying to find out what the values they were pursuing were, what their goals were, the nature of the island, which was a metaphor for the nature of life. And then at the end of it, it was very second-handed, where it was, what makes life worth living is other people. And, you know, yes. Something I'm personally dealing with is, yeah, loneliness is a real issue. And if you don't have psychological visibility, and they had an interesting definition of loneliness in this article where it was saying that your intimate relationships don't fit your expectations. Was that what the definition was?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, where, which you know, that could be wrong because if your expectations are wrong, well, then obviously the reality is not going to meet it. So, you know, maybe you have to go and get your expectations adjusted with the therapist, you know, just like going to the chiropractor and getting your back adjusted. But, you know, there is a legitimate thing there that if you're not receiving psychological visibility and there aren't people who are interacting with you as equals and they're not, you know, sort of giving you affirmation, that kind of stuff, like there's a legitimate loneliness there and there's a value to other people, right? We are social creatures. But then people take it too far, especially in art, especially in naturalistic art, right? What's the answer in everything in naturalism? It's all, no one has
your social standing.
Right. It's other people that we're suffering together. Any naturalistic story has the same fucking point. It's okay because we're suffering together.
I thought it was gay cowboys eating pudding.
But that's because they're suffering together.
Oh, yeah.
Because society has excluded them because they're, you know, getting in each other's back doors and pegging each other. They're together.
Gay people are not pegging. Stop saying it. You're perpetuating a myth.
Yep.
Oh, man.
You're heteronormative.
Here's the part I found particularly revealing / horrifying / whatever anymore. But many researchers believe, this is a quote, by the way, the United States is not doing enough to address loneliness as a public health issue. For inspiration, they pointed to the United Kingdom. Ugh. Begun in 2011, its national campaign to end loneliness involves 5 social service agencies and about 2,500 smaller organizations, this is my favorite part, all working to raise people's awareness of loneliness.
I think if you're lonely, you're pretty aware.
I don't know. What is this weird feeling inside me? Am I hungry? Yeah, I don't think it quite
that actually does.
That actually is an issue of like kind of repressing your feelings and not realizing that you have this need that you're not filling and so I mean, but that all that being said, I hate the word awareness. Like, who started that word? Like, oh, we need to raise awareness about that. Like, I never like that. Why not, like, oh, we need to teach people about the fact that this is a problem. Raise awareness seems like a weasel term to avoid something to me, instead of just saying we need to educate people about this issue.
All I hear when I hear raise awareness is whatever welfare, meaning basically you've just created loneliness welfare by
employing
5 social service agencies.
It's what James was saying about the last article. It's just them setting their agenda. So, James, the only reason they're making people aware of it is because they want people to be aware there's a problem, and then they can come in and say, we're going to fix it, which gives them more power. Because then they can just say, we're the only ones who can fix it. You're exactly right. Rather than educate people about it, or rather than provide a solution, they're not saying solve loneliness. They're not saying cure breast cancer. They're saying...
No, this is a Corolla thing, by the way. These fucking campaigns. Everyone's got a campaign to fucking do something. The campaign to end loneliness? You think you're going to put a stamp out on the loneliness fire?
Yeah.
Really? There can be no more loneliness when you're done with this? Even this is something non-tangible. You have fucking people like the mayor of D.C. Instituting a $5 million capital campaign to end traffic accidents by 2020.
Well, see, yeah, when I hear that, all I imagine is basically he's gonna ban cars. Is basically there will no longer be cars in DC. Like, that's what I imagine. This is,
yeah.
Like, what we need to realize is that the left never says what they mean. They never reveal their true intentions, because if they did, we would scream and never listen to them again. What they have to do is they have to introduce it by small incremental steps that seem plausible. Like, oh, hey, and loneliness? I don't want people to be lonely. I guess I better help. And then when a Republican says, wait a second, guys, the government shouldn't really be paying. I don't want to piss you off, but I mean, you know, I care about lonely people, of course. But the government shouldn't be paying for this. How dare you? You think people should be lonely. Dare you?
Not to go off on too much of a tangent away from loneliness here, but what you're saying about cars is exactly correct. That's the same logic that makes them want to ban guns completely. If there is one accident with a gun, it's not right. Even if one person is killed illegitimately, it's not right.
You're quoting the mayor. I hope you know that. Or at least you could write any of these political speeches. Her speech was exactly something like, if one innocent person dies in a traffic accident, that is unacceptable.
I mean, isn't that
it's unacceptable in our city.
Isn't it because their speeches are written by the kid, the fifth grader, and Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, who nobody was smarter than?
Yes, exactly. By the way, first initiative of the End Traffic Accidents by 2020 campaign, $1,000 fine for 20 miles per hour speeding. So, yeah, that'll help. Yeah, that'll help.
But the thing is, Justin, is no one – there is no, you're criticizing the logic here, but there is no logic. There's only a feeling, and they know that if they can get people to only address this issue only with their emotions, they know all they have to do is just simply use the proper rhetoric in order to get the policy or result that they need they desire.
That was my point entirely. I'm agreeing with you. I'm 100% agreeing.
I mean,
my point is the government says that so that people will say, oh, yeah, take away all our guns. Because they don't want people to accept the reality of the situation of shit happens. Like, no matter what someone's going to get shot by accident. I'm sorry.
I mean, it's these incredible social and psychological issues that I think are just going to hand the left an incredible amount of power. Think about the initiatives that they could enact with an end loneliness campaign and seeing it as a public health crisis, not just sort of step one, raise awareness or whatever the fuck that means. Step two, they're going to start getting all these statistics that we hear about, things like third hand fucking smoke. Now, loneliness this year killed 36,000 people. Is that acceptable in your life? We need to take more of your money to end loneliness.
I mean, it could go a lot further than that. It could, you know, this could raise to the level of, like, you know, criminalizing social ostracization. Like, you know, if you have a social club and there's someone there that you really don't like, and so the social club, says, yeah, could, like, ask that person to leave. You know, I could see a civil suit being brought about. I could see statues that would allow someone to sue over that.
Violates my right. Violates my right not to be lonely.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Is this what you have to look forward to, America?
Let me be clear, though. Let me be clear. So, you know, we're being a little over the top, and we're saying
we're not. No, who the fuck's being over the top? I'm not.
We're specifically when we made the point where, I guess when I made the point that you would know if you were lonely, when I said that, as speaking personally, if it's something that you've, you know, dealt with your whole life, you may not even realize it. So there is something to be said about, you know, teaching yourself and figuring out what's going on with yourself, but this is an individual issue. And the irony here is the same irony of socialism. Right? Where socialism actually makes people selfish in the negative sense more than individualism does and capitalism does. Because it makes you look at the other person and see them as an enemy and making sure you're having as much as them. Oh, I gotta make, keeping up with the Joneses is more of an example of second-handedness than it is an example of healthy, rational individualism. And that second-handedness is more bred with socialism than it is with capitalism. Well, in the same sense, leftist politics, leftist policies lead to more loneliness than anything else does. Because if you're a special, unique little snowflake that no one can understand, well, that's the fucking definition of loneliness. Nobody can understand you. So again, as James is saying, they're creating policies that creates a group of people that are only going to support them. So that's what it's all about. They want you to be lonely. So there's a fucking irony here.
Friendship privilege. Hmm.
Oh, God. Don't even say that.
Wait till they start rating us 1 through 10 and telling us who we can fuck and who has to fuck us. You know, everyone
right, if you're hot, you have to fuck the ugly girls, right? That's how it's going to work.
Right. And everyone has their quota of their numbers in their life of, you know, you get 50 is the number of your fucks you get in your life. Not you get 50 fucks, but you're, the total of the people you fuck can be 50. So, you know.
What about the number of fucks you have to give? Because after all of this, no one will want to give any fucks.
Exactly. That
zero!
At least the loneliness. But yeah, if you have to, the total of the people you fuck, they have to be ranked a total of 50. Well, if a girl's only ranked, you know, fucked a 1 because she's like a 0, you know, if we're talking about Amy Schumer, which is what's basically going on right now with Amy Schumer's career, you know, then it would be like, okay, Leonardo DiCaprio, you have to fuck Amy Schumer now. Okay, Ryan Gosling, you have to fuck Amy Schumer now.
Yeah. Hey, Justin, you have to fuck that girl that runs Feminist Frequency on the internet.
She's actually not that ugly, surprisingly.
Oh. I mean, I have no idea what she looks like.
I'm not saying she's that hot, but, you know, she's kind of average, so.
I assume she would be a horribly hideous human being.
Well, I mean, she
possibly
is.
Possibly talking, deformed.
I'm just talking physically, but I mean, if you gag her and, like, tie her up, like.
Oh, now you're talking.
Oh, God. Maybe she'll hear this. That'll get us some hits. All right,
yeah, but I wouldn't.
Are we ready
that,
to move
so.
On?
Always.
All right, let's talk about more social issues that are wrong with society when we turn our eyes to the Oscars again in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. At the end of this section is when we'll get into the Oscar talk and everything that's going on with that. But first I want to, you know, talk a little bit about some shows that have come out, some shows that are coming. We'll talk a little bit more about Deadpool. The first thing is Hulu is releasing a new series starring the other Franco, James Franco. It's based on a Steven Spielberg book. Steven Spielberg, wow. Stephen King. Woo! Stephen King book. It's called 11-22-63, and it's where James Franco goes through a closet to Narnia. No, I'm sorry, he goes through a closet to 1960 and tries to prevent the assassination of JFK by living in the past for 3 years, which is when any time he goes to Narnia, it's only 2 minutes in the present. Did either of you
so,
check out the show?
This Franco's, yeah, I did, but this Franco's the Franco you don't want to peg, right?
Right, as I said, it's the other Franco, and I don't need to pay. Okay. I got plenty going on.
Oh, I thought you were like, you had the Hitlerian thing going on.
No. Okay. Notice how I like Jews. Jews and I get
macro penis, not right. Micro penis.
Exactly. Gotta get that letter right.
Yeah. So I did watch, this episode. It's gonna be one episode per week on Hulu for 10 weeks or something like that.
It's an eight-part miniseries.
Eight. And this episode was like an hour and a something long.
20 minutes.
Pretty long. Okay, Mr. Specific. I'm just, gonna be over here. Lately I have this problem with getting into things. Nothing really grabs my attention immediately and this show was no different.
Oh my God.
I'd probably be fully present in that moment, that's for sure. Yep, that focuses their attention pretty acutely. But
speaking of Deadpool, I really appreciate that they were begging to celebrate National Women's Day, implying that like this is when women get to fuck men. Like that was a very good joke.
It was a very good joke.
I liked it.
Sorry, go on with the 11:22.
Oh, that better not be the size. but this is the thing. It's a show about an English teacher who's going to stop the assassination of JFK, but who has no discernible skills. Like, he can't fight. He's not that smart. He teaches fucking remedial English for adults in a high school.
And he kind of lacks confidence.
Yeah. He's not, I mean, the best thing he has going for him is he's kind of hot, right? Like, that's his number one skill.
His number one skill is he's played by James Franco.
Yeah. And he goes back to a time, he's not a history teacher. Like, he doesn't know anything about this time period. Like, he doesn't really fit in that well. He keeps fucking up by making really stupid decisions. I was just not into this show. Like, it sort of got quasi-interesting when the sci-fi or, I don't know, fantasy horror elements started popping up. The Stephen King elements started popping up.
You mean when Narnia showed up?
Well, the whole point, without giving spoilers, is that the past doesn't want to be changed. So the past fights back against being changed. That element was, you know, quasi-interesting. But nothing else, there was no... It was about as naturalistic of a portrayal as you could get without being pure unadulterated naturalism, in my opinion. Because it was just like a day in the life of this mediocre guy who's gonna do something that seems impossible for him to do.
Yeah, so, there wasn't any focus on his choices or anything. It was just sort of like, okay, I'm gonna do this now. And there was no significance to his choices. There wasn't a reason he changed his mind. I mean, the reason was I think the guy died or something, or the guy was like, almost dead of cancer, so he decided to take on this guy's mission. But it wasn't like there was any significance to that choice. It was just sort of like, oh yeah, that's what you do when a dude is almost dead of cancer. You take on his mission.
A guy with whom it's not clear why he has a relationship.
Because it gives him like, cheap cheeseburgers.
Like, he goes to this diner and the cook is nice to him, so I'm gonna give up 3 years of my life to try to stop the JFK assassination? And the reasons the guy gives for why this is important is like, maybe, just maybe, Vietnam wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know for sure? Like, I'm doing this on a maybe?
JFK would have stopped Vietnam. That's what's his argument. I mean, that's the thing about this show, right? So it's very naturalistic because it's slow paced, and as we're saying, there's no focus on why the choices are being made, and, you know, there's no broader themes in the show. But the thing about it as well is it's slow, so slow, it's sort of like the bad man's version of the Man in the High Castle, where you're going to get to the end of the season, and they can very easily do a twist where he stops the assassination of JFK, and then suddenly, you know, there's a dictator who rules the world, and he's like, fuck, I fucked up. And now season two is he has to go and do something else again, and it's called like 1-8-16 or something.
Yes. Probably not those numbers, but yes, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
It could be called 666.
Yeah.
He stops at JFK assassination, suddenly, like, Jesus appears with machine guns and is like, come with me if you want to leave! Because Jesus is played by Arnold Schwarzenegger in my mind.
So I want to consult your aesthetic knowledge, Justin.
Yes.
I noticed that with stories like that are about, you know, kings and queens, or, you know, or like, you know, the strongest man in the world, or, you know, the most skilled or the most intelligent, like these are stories that I find much more interesting as opposed to a story that's about someone normal who you'd think I might be able to identify with a little bit more, just someone who's normal. But a lot of times the stories I really identify with, cause I'm a lot closer to being a normal person than I am close to being, you know, some kind of frickin' genius. But it's the stories about the exceptional people that I find much more inspiring and compelling. Why is that? Does a story about someone average constitute naturalism, and why?
Well, there's a lot to unpack in what you just said. The first is your own self-esteem issues. I would not say that you are close to an average man. So that would be the first thing I would say. But the second thing I would say is that there's two.
Yeah, you're basically borderline retarded, is what Justin's trying to say.
You are not anywhere close to being average.
Yes. You should be looking up to the average man.
That was the closest thing I'm going to give
someday.
That was the closest thing I'm going to give to a compliment, okay? Jesus.
All right. I'll take it.
So there's two things about what you're talking about. The first is something that Ayn Rand writes about, you know, and it's the psychological need of people to aspire to greatness. And this is the opposite of what, you know, we were saying the left does, right? They don't want you to aspire to greatness. They want you to believe you have to be taken care of. So stories like that speak to your sense of life. The fact that you're responding to a story like that speaks to your sense of life. That I would say that means you're normal. You're rational. You're healthy in the sense that you want a story to inspire you. You don't want to read something to say, as a, you know, I say in my Man of Steel article, the real or ideal, you don't want to be part of the human helplessness pact. You're not reading something, you're not watching something to commiserate, right? I mean, that's how this story feels, 11-22-63. It's like, oh, wow, what if I was an average person who could just go back in time and fumble about and maybe stop JFK from being killed? Like, that's the human helplessness pact. So that's the first
thing. It's like, oh, it's okay. Don't worry. It's okay that you fuck everything up. Look at James Franco. He's beautiful and he fucks everything up too.
Right. And it's like I said, in the last story with loneliness, we're all in this together and that's what makes the suffering okay. That's why Lost was so disappointing at the end, because it was so romantic and then it put on a fucking naturalistic point. It made no sense. It was completely contradictory. But then the second thing is, no, I don't believe a story with an everyman hero necessarily has to be naturalistic. Because if you look at a movie like Die Hard, right? The whole point of Die Hard in the beginning was he was the everyman. But he's less, you know, he's become less and less of that as the movies have gone on. And even within that movie, he was less and less of that. But if you look at the movie at the beginning, he was the one who, you know, he was blue collar. Nobody took him seriously, right? He had the pretentious guy on the plane who told him to take his shoes off and make his toes into little balls. And then when he got to Nakatomi Tower, the limousine freaked him out. That was fucking weird that they sent a limousine for him. And then he goes up there and his wife's this big shot executive and, you know, everyone's all dressed up and he's in his wife beater and he's carrying his jacket and he's in slacks. Like, he's the everyman in that, and then he becomes the hero. So for a while, the American story was telling that, the everyman becoming the hero and becoming great. The problem is, what you've identified, James, is basically it's an easy way that naturalists do it nowadays. They tend to write about the average person because that's what they care about. So it doesn't have to be that the average person, telling a story about the average person, is naturalistic. It just tends to be that way because if you're a naturalist, you're not going to want to write about the great people. And if you do write about the great people, you're going to write about how they're average. Mm. How they're secretly average and they're no different from the rest of us.
Or secretly shitty.
Well, yes. That's what they mean by average. They mean that we're all shitty.
Right, yes, right. Because once they portray the shitty, they're like, it's okay that you're like this too. That's normal.
Right. So that's sort of the inverse,
right? Look
how
shitty we all are.
That's the inverse, yeah. Where naturalism with awesome people is about how they're shitty, and romanticism about average people is about how they can actually become awesome. Now you can see why one story certain people would want, one wouldn't. One puts the responsibility on you, you know, you can become awesome, that puts the work on you, while the other just tells you all you have to do is tear other people down. So there's a lot going on, you know, storytelling-wise and psychological complexity. And, you know, just like you were saying about the way the people at the top set the agenda, I don't think a lot of storytellers realize that they're doing this. Like, when you look at Jessica Jones on
Marvel on Netflix.
I don't think that woman realized she was doing naturalism. I think she just thought she was talking about male power over women and the way men control the world and the way they destroy the world and how shitty men are. She was one of these people who you said are just repeating it and honestly believe it. She's the man on the street repeating it. But somebody set that agenda and now she's telling it in a story and repeating it. And that, to me, that's the difference between an average storyteller and a great storyteller. A great storyteller like Brian Fuller, what he unpacks in Hannibal is what's good and what's bad. What's good, what's bad and what's evil. And he honestly looks at all the sides of it. And one of the amazing things about Hannibal is you can't ascribe it to any sort of ideology. You can't say right or left, libertarian, feminist. You know, even though Brian Fuller's gay and there's the gay undertones in it, there's the straight undertones, so you can't. And that's what makes it so wonderful is it's honest. He's actually trying to portray the world as he sees it.
Mm. Yeah. It's quite a good... Now, I was thinking about this series, and I couldn't help but think, how much of this fuck-up is Stephen King, and how much of this fuck-up is the adaptation? Has anyone read the book? Because it's based on a book, right?
No, it's based on a book. I haven't read the book, but I had the same thought when I was watching it, honestly. I think it's mostly Stephen King's fault. And what I mean by that is it had the same tropes, and it had the same manner of storytelling. And I think Stephen King is vastly overrated. If you look at all of his stories, they suffer from the same problems. I mean, his only really successful stuff has been like The Shawshank Redemption, which was done by Frank Darabont, who made The Walking Dead wildly successful with his adaptation of it.
Yeah. Yeah. The book, the, sorry, I'm thinking of The Green Mile, actually. Sorry. The book, The Green Mile is horrific. The movie, The Green Mile is mildly entertaining.
And that was also Darabont.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
By the way.
Thing about... Oh, yeah, go ahead, James.
Oh, yeah. This is the idea of portraying the ideal is actually, that's, now that I'm thinking about it, I think that might be the, one of the main reasons I like anime is because they don't try to tear their good characters down. Their characters, like, they have flaws, but they don't have any, like, one, you know, in a lot of American shows, at least nowadays, I find that the good characters will have some one really gross, like, unredeemable flaw. Like Tyrion, just like just having, you know, constant low self-esteem and being, like paralyzed by it at times. Or like, you know, or Sons of Anarchy when, you know, everyone is just fucking terrible after, and like, and so I say like, you know, whenever I look at an anime, I think like, man, if this was an American show, they'd make, you know, character X an alcoholic and then they'd, you know, have character Y hit his wife just to sort of balance things out a little bit.
Well, I mean, without going too deeply into it, a lot of times Japanese art, even in their music, and I mean, even sort of like K-pop and stuff like that. I mean, I know that's Korean pop, but if you look at their music and their art, a lot of it has more of the American traditional sense of life than American art does nowadays.
That's what I'm noticing.
Well, there's a lot to be said about how bad the show is and how much better it could be, but I just think in general, I mean, I'm not even that compelled to watch the next episode. I might watch one more.
I don't care.
Yeah, I might watch one more, but I can't imagine it's going to go anywhere fascinating.
I was done.
Especially with all the fucking J.O. of JFK. Yeah. Like, Jesus, he was not that great. He was pretty shitty, in fact. So,
well, Stephen King's a leftist from New England. What do you expect? I mean, they worship the Kennedys there. I mean, my grandmother, who grew up there, eighth grade education, said, once the Kennedys are the royalty of Massachusetts. Yeah, you mean like the thing we fucking left behind, Grandma, when we left it in England and you're in New England?
Yeah, fucking Grandma.
Fuck you, you old biddy.
I was done with 11-22-63, where he goes into the bar, and it's like the fifth round of the fight, and he's like, I'm gonna bet all my money on the thing happening that you guys think is impossible. And then when it happens and everyone thinks he was, like, in on fixing the fight, he, like, is like, oh, my God, why do they think I'm in on that?
And then he drives, like, literally half a mile away to a hotel in a bright yellow car. You're a retard, dude. I'm not even – that. I'm into naturalistic critiques of things, but this is just took me out of the – you can't do something that's going to take me out of the moment. Like, that was insane. That was just so stupid.
It's ironic because it's an English teacher who probably teaches naturalism because the guy's story at the beginning of like his family being killed, he's like, this guy's a brilliant writer, was in a naturalistic story doing naturalistic things. And there's an
The brilliant story was him recounting exactly what happened to him.
Right. And there's an excellent...
Oh, brilliant fucking storytelling, janitor.
there's an extra level of irony here, because did you know James Franco got a creative writing MFA from Columbia?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Yeah, and I think I've told you this story before. One of our friends at Clemson, I was good friends with him, was in the same program and had a class with him. And he just said that James Franco was not very smart, and all he did was get attention and try to hook up with the girls the whole time. So I found it extra funny that he was teaching the class, because it was very ironic to me.
How? Okay, just one last point about this. Like, you can make such small changes to make this wildly more compelling for me. Like, instead of James Franco being a mediocre English teacher,
you could make him Dave Franco.
One, recast it with anyone else, especially Dave Franco. Too young for this, but two, how about just like a really impassioned history teacher who's teaching a great lesson about JFK and who knows his shit about JFK, and then in this diner he's been going to stumbles upon this and makes the realization that he has the opportunity to basically like save his idol or whatever.
Yeah, even if the
guy
told
him. Like, how much fucking more compelling would that be?
Yeah, even if the guy told him and he was like, why the fuck didn't you tell me this beforehand? And he's like, I didn't want you to think I was crazy. Like, they could have made it work.
They could have made it work way better and made it more romantic about him, like, making this choice to give up his teaching career because he thinks this is wildly important. I don't know.
All right, so...
It's really basic storytelling that got fucked up.
Yeah. So... Well, that's what happens with naturalism. So...
Yeah.
These next two things, let's real quick just say, you know, what we thought of them, if that makes us interested, if we think it's a good idea. So, Marvel's Daredevil released their Season 2 official trailer, Part 1. Quick thoughts on it. Does it make you want to watch Season 2?
Yes.
Ish. To me, it looked like the underplayed version of Batman versus Superman. Like, the much less interesting version of Batman versus Superman. I'm going to watch it because I thought Daredevil Season 1 was so good that it deserves... But if the big tension, like, I don't know, there's a part two of the trailer coming out, which I think will probably pique my interest more, but part one was basically like, oh, the difference between a vigilante who kills people and a vigilante who puts people's heads on spikes but doesn't kill them, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean...
I wasn't... It didn't create enough of a tension for me to be like, yeah, fucking Daredevil, motherfucker! But
yeah,
I will watch it.
I agree with that. I mainly like John Berthenal as the Punisher. I thought that was really good casting, and he did a really good job in it. Of course, known by
Shane. Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah. I think that's very exciting.
But that's mainly where my enthusiasm comes from, is the Punisher, who's always been one of my favorite superheroes. Because he just... There's something I like about the grittiness of a superhero, of just like his superpower is he has a gun.
And he's angry.
And he's pissed off. Cause, you know.
I think he's gonna be the villain though, James.
His superpower is he's
the
NRM.
But the villain was the hero in the last Daredevil season anyway. Yeah, it really pissed me off that, like, the hero's best friend is just, like, killed because of some really silly mistake. And then they make him evil at the end. And it's like, oh, wait. They're kind of like, oh, wait, dude, we fucked up. Like, Wilson Fisk, he's supposed to be the bad guy. Make him say something crazy before the punishment, before Daredevil, you know, throws him in jail. Okay, oh, nice. All right. We're good.
My thing about this trailer, though, was the fact that there actually is two parts to this trailer. Like, are we fucking at that point now that we have movies that have multiple parts, we have trailers that have multiple parts? I got to the end and I was like, fuck you. I don't want to watch a part two to see Elektra. It was, like, offensive.
To you, Netflix. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's content marketing. It's only going to get worse.
Yeah. All right.
Stay tuned for the 100-part trailer.
Speaking of things only getting worse, Homer Simpson will appear live on an upcoming Simpsons episode. Are you guys buying or selling this?
I don't even know what to do with this. I don't even know what that means.
That's what
I don't
watch
this
Simpsons, either.
So.
I kind of like The Simpsons. They've gotten a bit of a resurgence in the writing. in the past year that I've liked, but I honestly don't know what this means. Will appear live. He's a cartoon. He's literally not live. Can't appear live. So what does that mean?
And the article does not make it clear.
I know.
Maybe what they're going for here is sort of the more spontaneous kind of cartoon humor that we see in Rick and Morty, where the way that – have either of you seen Rick and Morty?
Yes.
Yeah, I can't –
What, you don't like it?
Daniel doesn't like it.
No. Look, here's the thing. If there was a button called drop all the times they say Rick and or Morty – I would watch the show religiously. I literally cannot stand to hear the words Rick or Morty a fucking again.
It's
can't do it.
It's almost as bad as the Hardcore Harry trailer where she says Harry like 80 times in the first minute.
I don't see why you'd say that, Daniel. It's just, they like to say Morty. What can I say?
Come on,
I just
Rick.
Can't.
Why would
Call
you do
Rick.
That, Rick?
That's it not doesn't even make sense, Rick. Rick. I can't put this up my ass, Rick. It's just too big, Rick. Rick, it's too big for my ass. Rick. Morty. Rick. I can't do it anymore.
That never crossed my mind that they say the words, the literal sounds, Rick and Morty. That never crossed my mind.
I texted Justin and I said, if they say Rick or Morty one more time in this goddamn episode, I will not watch the show. And then almost immediately I was like, oh, it's over. I can't do it.
It's so true. Like, I love the show and it's hilarious. But now that you've said that, like, yeah, that's like what, so Game of Thrones thing is that they have a bunch of characters and they rape and murder people. Rick and Morty's thing is that they just say Rick and Morty all the time.
Yes. All the fucking time. I can't do it.
I mean, I think that's been, I mean, maybe they're trying to play off of that because, I really do like that spontaneous style of humor stacked on top of a cartoon. It's really worked well for them.
Are they like gonna live draw him, like the frames for the,
it's like one of those Gollum things, like where he's, you know, moving around and that causes him to, the cartoon to move, I guess. So the
motion capture? I don't know. Whatever.
Fine. Yeah. Let's talk motion about capture?
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, we're done with this shit.
On to the pegging.
So, as I posted on our Facebook page this week, somebody actually used internet activism for a good thing. They're trying to get Deadpool to host Saturday Night Live. Are you guys buying or selling that?
I would totally watch the shit out of that episode.
That's
buying, because then I'd actually watch Saturday Night Live.
Right. And doesn't pop culture, this is the thing, I want Deadpool to become a thing. And, you know, we'll talk about this in one more second, what I actually want to happen. But I want Deadpool to become a thing because I think our culture could use a little chaos. Can you imagine if Deadpool was just like a meme where he just went in and made fun of everything and made everything nonsense?
What are you, Heath Ledger's Joker? Our society could use more chaos?
A little bit. Just Deadpool going in and fucking everything up?
I'm not sure where you're going with this, Justin. It just, chaos, Justin? I mean, really, Justin? Justin?
So,
I can't fit it in my ass, Justin! It's just too big!
Here's the best part. James does a pretty good Rick impersonation, and Daniel does a pretty good Morty impersonation.
Oh my god.
This is gonna happen. But so, the next thing I want to happen is, so Ryan Reynolds actually did an audio response to this, and it's called Why Deadpool Won't Be Hosting SNL, and it's like a 45-second clip of him just saying the most ridiculous Deadpool things that he supposedly sent to Lorne Michaels in the 90s, and that's why he's been blacklisted from SNL. But my thing is, this is what I want to happen. I want Ryan Reynolds to actually become Deadpool so he can't stop doing these things ever. I think that would be the coolest thing ever.
That would be a real dedication to your art right there. I've actually become Deadpool. I've literally mutilated myself and have started a vigilante business.
Yes.
I am become Deadpool.
Okay, so then of course now...
Wait, I thought the pop culture reference that he was going for was making fun of Kanye West's recent meltdown on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, well that's what he was doing.
Because Kanye West Oh, well, what were you talking about with the things he's previously said to Lauren, Mike? I didn't understand the context of the video, apparently.
It was both. It was, you know, he was doing it as Kanye West, but it was about why he wouldn't ever be on SNL because they wouldn't let him on.
Oh, okay. I must have missed something in something you said, but it doesn't matter. I don't get pop culture, so let's just move
Deadpool
on.
Deadpool always works on multiple levels. And of course, because Deadpool's so popular, people are now trying to destroy it. So I have a link in here on the outline that you guys can check out that I'm sure Daniel and James have already checked out. It's why Deadpool's box office blowout terrifies me. And the basic point of this article is the reason it terrifies this author, Scott Mendelson, over at Forbes, is he thinks that because of this, there are going to be more movies about white male superheroes.
Yeah.
Well, he's not white in the movie. After the surgery, he's like a pukish red color. He's just his own. And then they have like a weird ass, you know, lesbian teenager. And then like a Russian dude made of metal. So it's like it's got every demographic in it. The white man is the bad guy.
Pretty diverse as far as I could see. Yeah. Also, one of the strongest female co-leads that has been in any superhero movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
Right, a very well-defined character, yeah.
Yeah. So,
and don't forget
this guy can...
Teenage Warhead saves Colossus at 1.2.
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever you just said there, absolutely.
The lesbian saves the metal Russian dude.
Oh, right. Gotcha. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. These arguments make no sense to me, and we're going to get this more in a second with the Oscars. This whole, this is the Adam Carolla argument that I use. It's like, oh my God, if I don't see people who look exactly like me on the screen, I'll have no idea how to respond. Like, that's the stupidest fucking argument in the history of time. And they don't get into these arguments when you have things that go negatively or maybe positively for your race. So let's talk about the Oscars bullshit.
Okay, well, the big thing about the Oscars, and by the way, I love that this is an Associated Press story because of the title, right? The title of the story from an Associated Press is Damning Study Finds a Whitewashed Hollywood. Why
Damning
is the Associated
study.
Press using, first of all, biased language, and second off, clickbait now? The Associated Press has now stooped to the level of clickbait.
Yeah.
Yeah, all you need is, like, you won't believe who won the Oscars this year. That's all they need is something.
Or
you
yes,
will
you
believe.
Will.
Exactly. It was a white person. No, so this study was done by some school at USC. I don't fucking really care who did it because this study is asinine. And I'm going to read you a couple paragraphs from the article here. They're short paragraphs because it's the Associated Press, and they think you can only read on a fourth grade level. So blame them, not me. In the 414 studied films and series, only a third of speaking characters were female, and 28.3% were from minority groups, about 10% less than the makeup of the U.S. population. I'm just going to pause
oh,
here.
Oh, lordy, lordy.
Aren't there more women than men?
There are.
It gets the other way around. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, that's right. That's right. Yeah,
right.
There are.
So technically, it's good that we're being more represented anyway.
Oh,
we're the minority.
Fuck you.
Characters
right.
40 years or older skew heavily male across film and TV, 74.3% male to 25.7% female. And then I love this paragraph. This is my favorite fucking thing.
This is my favorite. I circled this with a red digital marker, by the way.
Just 2% of speaking characters were LGBT identified. Okay, I'm going to pause here again for a second. Isn't it only like 3% of the population is gay?
It's like 2.5.
Right, so,
actually.
Okay, that sounds
yeah.
pretty fucking accurate to me. But here we go. This is the part I love. Ready? Here we go. Among the 11,306 speaking characters studied, only 7 were transgendered, and 4 were from the same series. I love how it uses the word only 7. Can you guys name me one other transgender person besides Caitlyn Jenner?
There were 2 transgendered people in that terrible show Sense8. Yeah.
Well, that's okay. So that's 2. The other 4 were from that show Transparent, I'm assuming, right? So then we need one more. I don't know where the other transgender person. But I'm talking about in real life. How many transgender people do you know in real life?
One no, personally. I would say 7 out of the 11,306 is probably an accurate ratio.
Right.
Actually, maybe a little high.
A little background on these studies. I actually went to USC, and actually when I was admitted as a freshman into the Annenberg School of Communication. I was actually a journalism major before I switched to physics. And yeah, I'm not kidding. Yeah, just, yeah, yeah. So, glad I, and when I was touring the school, I actually remember the people who do these kind of studies. It's literally someone in with headphones on watching TV and movies, and they're just writing down specific things like, oh, okay, there's a black person. Yep. Oh, okay, that woman just spoke. That doesn't happen enough. Okay, you know, like that's literally what they're doing. There's these people, they just got these little poor students who are rats in cages, and they have to keep track of this shit. And I'm like, and I remember thinking like, man, I'm glad I don't gotta do that job.
Yep.
Yeah. When we start to, this is a quote from the article, when we start to step back to see this larger ecology, I think we see a picture of exclusion. And it doesn't match the norms of the population of the United States. One question, how many conservatives are portrayed in Hollywood movies, TV?
See, that's the question that, like, you just can't ask because of, like, of course this is a systematic, these sorts of things are systematic. They don't actually care if there's equality of representation of this stuff. They just need to portray victimization in order to achieve a specific political goal. It's all a sham. And Karl Marx and Saul Alinsky, the entire school of critical theorists from the Frankfurt School, they all explicitly admit it. We're not interested in the truth. We're interested in, you know, furthering the cause of the expansion and domination of the state. Blah!
Dogs and cats will lie down together. Yes, end of the world shit. Real end of the world shit here.
Speaking of this yes. underrepresentation stuff, that goes to my favorite comment on this article. So, somebody complains on the... about how every media outlet gets it wrong. It says, every media outlet I have reviewed thus far has taken a discriminatory stance against people with disabilities. Despite being given the knowledge that they have been left out, that they have left out the most underrepresented people in this medium and the most overlooked member of our society, 20% of the U.S. population, they still choose this. What I deem bigoted response to this group of people. So they want...
20%? Of U.S. society is disabled?
Keep in mind, it's a comment section. But that's part of why it makes it funny. But also, even this article that says there's not enough representation in art in Hollywood is complaining that there's not enough representation in the article about not enough representation.
This...
where
does
it
stop?
Well, this is where it stops. You know, I have a problem. There is a 0% representation of Justin in Hollywood.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I was literally going there. Yes, I was going to say it stops at a 1-for-1 representation of human beings in cinema. Every year, every human being on the entire planet should get their share of the time on screen in every movie. This means having to change out characters mid-sentence. We'll fucking have to do it. But this is the only way we're going to eliminate discrimination in Hollywood, 1-for-1 representation. Absolutely. But this is what I was saying earlier. I know this is not a particular argument that James finds compelling, but it's one that I find humorous, which is why I say it, which is that people don't give a shit when this goes the opposite way. And this is what I lovingly call the Adam Carolla Jewish roofer question, which is, why isn't the left screaming that there aren't more Jewish roofers? Just out there marching. We need more Jews on the roofs. Jews on the roofs.
Because
Jews on the roofs.
They're worried about accidentally hitting their giant penises with hammers.
They could use their giant penises as hammers. They just drop it, and the nail just poof.
There you go.
It's a hole in your roof. Sunlight. Yeah. Sun. Yeah. Anyway, but or the fact that there aren't women doing construction jobs or going off to war to die, like. We need more representation of these people, right? If we're going to have to represent everyone and every goddamn thing that happens. Oh, no, you only want it in things that are really positive. Oh, I see. Things that you see as being a benefit to whatever it is race you have. How fucking enlightened of you, you bitches.
Right. And I mean, this boils down to, like, what we saw when we saw what the Coen brothers said. Just fucking tell different stories. Don't worry about the fucking representation of races and genders and religions and disabilities or whatever the fuck you want to represent. You know, small penises, big penises, whatever. Worry about the stories. If you're bored with what's going on, tell a fucking different story. You know, The Wire had a lot of black people because they were like, we're going to have this in the inner city in Baltimore. So they had to fucking have black people on the show because who's in the inner city in Baltimore?
See, now that seems racist to me. See, they oversampled black people now. So they're saying that black people live in squalor. They're going to need to throw in some Asian families and Jews in there. So.
Well, they did that important. Rush off the boat. So.
One other minor point here. Has anyone thought that of doing a study about who people would prefer to see on screen? Because, I mean, when I talk to, like my fiance, this is an anecdotal, so this is not evidence. I'm not saying it is, but, like, she doesn't like to go to movies with female leads, usually, because she doesn't like to watch other women act. She just doesn't like it. She prefers to see men.
I know why you're marrying her. I didn't realize she was so smart.
Yeah, she prefers to see men act. She just, that's what she likes.
Well, it's because she's
strong
smart.
Male characters. So, has anyone done a survey about what people want to see on the screen?
You know what?
I'm sure.
I know what they want to see. Can I tell you?
Yes.
They want to see good fucking stories. They look at Star Wars. They don't give a fuck. A black guy and a woman are the two fucking leads.
That was a good ass story right there.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm done with this fucking Oscars Hollywood bullshit. Let's move on to something else that's going to annoy the crap out of me. The internet. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way. EA Glow, Steam rocks, God rest for my Firefox. See, these things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't host it, but we will repost it. First Reddit. How do you afford to have fun? Work, work, work. Work all day. Stealing the underpants.
I feel like this question's very psychologically revealing on the part of the asker.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's from the personal finance subreddit.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay.
But I do.
My way is that the things that I really enjoy the most are things that make me money. So
right.
One of the things that's the happiest part of my week is tutoring one of my students. And I tutor him, you know, at a lower rate so I can tutor him more just cause I like tutoring him.
That's not like a euphemism, is it? Okay.
I would make a very off color joke, but I won't do that cause it's inappropriate.
Yeah, and it's teaching, so yeah, let's not get me fired.
Right, that's exactly why I was holding my tongue. I have sympathy because I also tutor, and I also enjoy tutoring very smart students, so I understand. Yeah, and I mean, not just that, it's just when you design your budget, design it around making sure the things that you want to do are part of the budget.
Yeah, budgeting does not necessarily mean being as poor as you possibly can be for the sake of saving money. It means understanding the money coming in and understanding the ways you want to spend that money and making sure you have enough to live on, retire, et cetera, et cetera, et
right.
cetera.
So like I put $500 towards pop vinyls. It happens.
Yes. For anyone unfamiliar, we've talked about pop vinyls a lot on the show, but I don't think we've actually explained what the fuck a pop vinyl is.
We're not
anyone who's curious. Okay. Google it. The other thing is, like, and one important thing is people relate having fun with spending money, and sometimes that is the case, and if it is the case that the things you want to do to have fun cost money, you have to budget accordingly. Like, Fies and I would much prefer to go on a mini vacation or have a nice dinner out than to buy a bunch of movies or a fancy car or, you know, do other things that cost money. So we budget accordingly. But the other thing is, like, you know, if you like things like, hiking, playing basketball, going to free concerts in cities or whatnot. Like, there's a lot of free shit.
Pegging.
That's free.
That's like...
It depends. Right. You know, you need a willing participant.
But, yeah. The cost of the dildo, and then you're good to go.
Exactly. Yeah. One-time investment.
Reusable.
Exactly. But there are a lot of things going on that don't cost that much money or are free, in fact. So be sure to take advantage of those things, or at least check out your options in that regard. So how can you afford not to have fun? That's the real question.
Basically, just write down all the fucking shit you spend money on and then be like, okay, how much of this stuff is actually necessary to survival? Then you have your survival cost. Like, I will die and or not be able to make money without spending this money. And then the rest of it, ask yourself if that's you having fun, and then just decide what you having fun would be. That's it.
Hooray!
Pretty simple. All right. Next Reddit.
Also, I would rather go to the, so this was the personal finance section of Reddit. I'd rather go to the mildly interesting section of Reddit, which is a real section of Reddit.
Okay. Next week for you, Daniel, I will take a Reddit from the mildly interesting subreddit, okay?
Thank you.
All right. For now, let's take one from the Life Pro Tips subreddit. If someone does a good job for you and you are asked to do a survey, do it. Their compensation may depend on it.
Okay.
Anyone agree, disagree with this?
This has got to be really job specific. Like, I'm asked 100,000 times to do surveys at restaurants, and I'm pretty sure that has nothing to do with their compensation.
The situation that popped into my mind when I read this was when you, like, get help on the phone from a bank, and then afterwards they're like, hello, did the person be nice to you? They even say it with bad grammar, too. And I'm like, yes, the person did be nice to me. And, you know, and if they were not, you know, if they be nice to me, then I want to give them credit for that. But this sounds like someone who's just really trying to get their ratings up, you know, when they try to be nice to people at the bank.
Yeah,
well, I didn't try this earlier. I was just curious if this linked to, like, a survey.
No, that'd be funny. But, I think the underlying principle here, though, is, you know, the trader principle. If someone does well, make sure they're rewarded for it. And what I mean is, so I've been having trouble with the way my health reimbursement account is set up with my fucking job and the healthcare provider and everything, where it's just a load of bullshit. And I was on the phone for a long time, to the point that, like, people were putting me on hold and then hanging up on me and kept transferring me. And I was like, what the fuck? Nobody knows what's going on. Can I just talk to someone? And then this one guy actually dealt with me to the fact that he called me back over a series of days. And when we were done, I go, so can you direct me to a manager so I can, like, commend you for what you did and, like, make sure you're acknowledged for it by your employer? And I did that because he actually helped me out and made my life better.
Yeah, and I'm sure to acknowledge that. I don't know if survey is necessarily the way. Depends on the situation. By the way, if you want to get your survey answered, make it fucking simple as possible. You know what survey I answered a goddamn 1,000 times, which is probably why I started to put on weight again, is that fucking Subway survey, where it's like, this 1-minute survey gets you a free cookie.
Yeah.
Like,
they had
really?
That at Del Taco, too. Like, a 3-minute survey, and you got, like, $1 off of $3. It's like, ooh, free tacos.
Exactly. But I was in a line, a drive-thru at a Whataburger in Texas. Anyone familiar with Whataburger?
Yeah, I went there once, and I was like, what? This isn't a burger.
What a piece of shit. Yes. Anyway, it was late at night. We were drunk. Not driving drunk, but anyway. the guy giving us the spiel went on, like, a 15-minute rehearsed amazing spiel about the menu, and it was, like, done deadpan. It's hard to reenact it, except that at the end, after we stopped fucking laughing and we ordered, there was silence, and then he came back and said, would you like an apple or peach pie to savor the moment? And we all fucking lost it. And went back up to the drive-thru window, and there's this guy, super deadpan Indian guy. And we actually called Whataburger Corporate, which has a 24-hour line, and recommended this guy for a promotion because he was so fucking awesome. So take the time. And now Apu is the CEO. So Apu Nahasabima Pentalon. Yes.
All right. Now that sums that up. Let's go to the last Reddit here. My daughter routinely comes home from school with 1 to 2 hours of homework to do every night. If
Fuck
my
that.
Boss did this to me, I would tell him to shove it up his ass.
That's right.
Tim Cook.
And he'd be like, ooh.
Yes, this Back iPhone door. Does fit up my ass. Isn't this an Adam Carolla thing? Didn't Adam Carolla do a whole episode about this?
Yes, Adam Carolla is a very famous advocate for a no homework policy. He thinks it's insane. He basically keeps saying on every episode it's ruining his wife's life. That's how he screams about
it. Oh my god. He should hire her.
She's the one doing it.
Cause she ends up doing it, or she ends up being the basically manager.
Right.
Of like the project manager for getting all these things done. So, I'm a huge advocate against homework as well. And I don't necessarily mean like reading at home. Or studying on your own and encouraging kids to be self-starters and explorers and interested in the world around them. But the sort of busy work, kind of worksheet-esque homework, I'm not convinced that that's very helpful.
I mean, there's a legitimate place for, like, you know, write a paper, and we're not going to give you time to write the entire paper in class. Or you're going to have a test. Prepare for it how you want. If you want to study, study. If you don't, you know, that's your own, you're signing your own death certificate at that point.
Right. But busy work kind of stuff.
Right. But at the same time, there are legitimate things for kids to learn, for teenagers to learn, outside of the classroom. And you're taking away those opportunities if you're expecting them to be doing schoolwork the whole time.
Exactly. And it's not like you go to school for like 16 minutes and then you have to come home. You're there for like 7 fucking hours. What are you doing? What are you doing for 7 hours?
Well, this
Learn
is probably
some shit.
Also a problem of the teachers aren't teaching, the homework's teaching.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, the only reason we have such a problem, as a tutor who helps kids with homework a lot, the reason homework is such a huge deal, and that for some kids, yeah, it goes on a lot longer than 1 to 2 hours. I mean, let me just tell you, when I was in high school, I did about 4 hours of homework per night, on average. That's because I had Korean parents. They're not actually Korean, but they like have the same values as Koreans. But the reason is because the schooling that's going on is just extremely inefficient. And so students who are actually serious about learning and getting into a good college, they have to basically do it on their own. On the public school level, I definitely don't advocate eliminating homework because eliminating homework wouldn't encourage the public schools to become more efficient. It would take the one place in high school where you're actually forced to think for yourself. It would take that away. So, I'm totally okay with what everything you guys are saying, but in public school, so long as we have the shitty institution of public schooling, there's got to be homework. It's not pretty, but that's what I found from my experiences. That's when the kids actually fucking learn something.
No Child Left Behind means do more homework.
Jeb Bush got left behind.
Yeah.
Ha! Primary joke.
Let's put an end to this. This has been dragging on. I think people are sick of us at this point. They're sick of us this week. Like, why don't you shut
too much pegging.
Up? Yeah, too much. I'm sure they got sick of that. What did we learn this week, Daniel?
I learned that one of the Francos is terrible.
You just learned that?
I didn't really know. I've never watched anything with him in it, so.
Oh. Was it the one named James? James, what did you learn?
I learned not something on this show, but something of note. I went to an airsoft op. I was at an airsoft op all weekend. It was a 24-hour straight game where there was 2 teams of 100 guys. And they organized it really, really well. But what I learned is just how few people are willing to take individual initiative for themselves. Like whenever I just had to take charge of my squad of 10 guys. Because like the commander was just like, wait, like, isn't someone supposed to like tell me what to do? I'm like, well, no, you're the commander. You tell us what to do. That's how this works. He's like, oh, and then we floundered around. I'm like, actually, hey, do you mind if I just am commander now? He's like, yeah, I guess that's okay. I'm like, God damn it. At least be angry at me that I just asked for your position.
Easiest coup in history.
At least scream mutiny.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Did you shoot him in the nuts just to do it?
I should have.
Yeah. He's like,
Commander's privilege, right?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought there was nothing there.
When we snuck into the enemy team's camp at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I said, and I told him, like, okay, guys, everyone go through the camp, and at night they're not going to be able to tell which uniform you're wearing, so they'll be able to see, so they'll think you're on their team. So what you do is, I want you all spreading rumors that their command is incompetent and like getting them killed. And then I also, and then at 3 o'clock in the morning, I want you to all raise the alarm that like the enemy is attacking and that everyone needs to wake up and get ready, get their gear on and everything. And they were like, no, dude, that's a dick move. I'm like, wait, what? Like, are they going to send us to airsoft prison if we do this? This isn't against the rules. Like, oh, I don't know, man. Like, it's not against the rules, but like, I don't know. So I basically did that myself. Like, so their entire team, instead of getting any sleep, like, was waiting at 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, are they coming? Are they coming?
So that's the equivalent of pulling the fire alarm on the other team the night before the Super Bowl.
That is, yeah. No, it's not, because it was during the game.
I know. Because the game is 24 hours illegal.
Yes. But you did violate the Airsoft Geneva Convention. So you will have to go to the Airsoft Hague and be tried.
Right. It was a war crime.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I also went around and like convinced some of them to leave the game. Like, I'm like, dude, it's cold. Like, you should just go. It's just, this is too hard. Cause it was in Central California. Like, and at night it gets pretty damn cold. Like a lot of people weren't prepared. So like, I depleted their team's numbers by, like, I convinced a few of their team to just leave. And then on my way out, I took their respawn flag, so they didn't have a respawn flag the next day.
Breaking news, which is something we're all about to learn, the Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice runtime has been revealed. Anyone want to take a guess?
I hope it's like 8 hours long.
Me too.
It's fairly close. It's 2 hours, 31 minutes.
What? It's under 3 hours? Come on. I'm disappointed.
Come on, 2 hours, 31 minutes is a long film.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
It's a long film. So Justin, what did you learn this week other than that?
I learned that before I see Batman vs. Superman, I'm gonna have to empty my bladder like 8 times.
Justin's getting cast.
I mean,
for
Batman
v Superman.
I have a tiny bladder.
Oh, tiny American bladder.
No, yes. I learned that Hitler has tiny German penis.
Tiny micro-penis for the German. Yes. This is a South Park reference, by the way. I'm not just being wildly racist against Asians. But if you learned something this week, like you enjoy wild racism against Asians, then why don't you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? Not 4, not 3, not even 1, but 5 stars on iTunes. And leave us a little comment. We've got a bunch of them. We're apparently fairly popular. I didn't understand this. But I got a hint of our popularity this week, Justin. By the way, listening to the Midside has added benefits. Listener, Michael Jones from Chicago, who sent us that story last week about the taxes on feminine hygiene products, also got a huge job offer this week after his name was mentioned on the Midside podcast. Coincidence? I think not. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We are personally guaranteeing you an enormous job offer if you listen to this podcast and are mentioned. That's right. Money, no money back guarantee here. But anyway, tell a friend, like Michael did. Tell coworkers, tell your dog. We'll even take like a semi-intelligent parrot or something. Like, that'd be perfectly fine with me. And also, if you really want to support us, you can go to twitter.com/themidside, follow us there, facebook.com/themidside. Or themidside.com. And then, of course, we cannot say enough nice things about the amazing people who support us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/themidside. You can choose to give us money, real life money, per piece of content, as little as a penny, as much as, you know, $25. We're not going to be greedy. You know, whatever. It helps us pay for hosting, marketing, and Justin has got some marketing things in the pipeline for you folks. Go to Facebook and be ready for that. And I'm gonna give a little spoiler here that we just recorded the mid-side episode of the Snyder series for Man of Steel, and ladies and gentlemen, it's fucking unbelievable. It's the best sound that has ever hit your eardrums aside from your partner's orgasm. That's all I'm saying. It's like a close second to hearing Tim Cook just scream holy backdoor in your eardrums.
Or if you've ever wanted me to be your partner, you will probably hear the sound of me orgasming on that podcast.
At least 11 times. Justin just had a tiny, tiny refractory period in that episode. Almost made it every few minutes there.
If
so.
Only my refractory period was actually that short.
Yes, yes. You'd be a teenager again. Yes. So if you want to be sure not to miss an episode, subscribe on iTunes. Tell other folks to subscribe on iTunes. Tell Zack Snyder to subscribe on iTunes. He is going to love it. Thanks.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the mid-side. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Day!